Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we have the liberty to talk with Michael Callahan, the Chief Marketing Officer at a leading cybersecurity firm known as Imperium, based in Dallas, Texas. Michael, thanks for your time, and let's go ahead and get started.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Robbie.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, we looked up your bio, and it seems like you have a very rich and historical background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some more of the highlights of your career, please?
Yeah, sure. And you're right. I mean, it's been security. I hadn't really planned on going into security so much. I had been, when I got out of school, I planned to go into, believe it or not, biomedical engineering, in particular with a focus on ceramics and ceramic implants and body parts and all that. But got into technology and loved it. And that went from kind of broad technology into security, which the last 20 years has been really in security and absolutely love it. It's been, this nonstop, cops and robbers, and it'll always be that way, good guys versus bad guys. And really enjoyed it. And so I've had some larger companies like HP and Juniper, where we've done some really great security work, and some really, really early startups. In fact, I had a great one I'm really excited about and proud of that was to keep kids safe when they were online. And that was from, like, on a napkin to, paying customers, which is great. And then now with Imperium, doing mobile security, which, huge problems on mobile, but then some really good solutions as well to the mobile security risks.
Oh, it sounds awesome. Now, how did you venture into this Imperium? Is this a company that you kind of helped to create from the beginning?
No, I wish I had, because of how impactful mobile is becoming in our lives, right? And like, it's, you could probably do, 80 to 90% of your work or your day on mobile, right? So especially on the corporate side, the only thing it's like hard to do, right, is if you have to, maybe you're doing a spreadsheet or a PowerPoint, but otherwise you could put everything on your phone. So I wish I had been there at the beginning, but I came in a few years after. The team that started it made some real critical decisions architecturally that's going to enable us to go and provide solutions not just for, phones and tablets, but also a lot of the IoT devices where you need something that's on the device providing that protection. So I've been here for a little while, always been in security, but then this opportunity came up and I saw the potential to do good, to protect these devices that we've become so attached to, and haven't looked back since.
Sounds awesome. Now, obviously the name, there's some significance behind the name Imperium. Is there a deeper meaning behind it in terms of cybersecurity?
So again, I wish there was something like more specific to cybersecurity, but the reality is it's derived from a Latin word, Imperium, which is empire. Thought of that as there's so much, like everybody has, a mobile device, and it was almost thought of it like, you've got this empire of protection. And Z happened to be a, one of the founders' names has a Z in it. That was it. I wish I could tell you that it was more like insightful and had all this great meaning, but that was really it.
Okay. Now, how long has this Imperium been in business?
It's been about, I would say really 7 or 8 years. And I say that because we started as a particular solution and then evolved into what we are today about 7 years ago. And then we really, the first couple of years are always focused on building the product, getting a couple of use cases or customers going. And then it's really in the last 3 or 4 years that we've taken off and continue to see this 100% growth year over year, quarter over quarter.
Sounds excellent. Now, does Imperium have a presence in other countries as well, or are you just based in Dallas, Texas?
Based here, for sure. Most of our employees are here, but we have sales offices around the world, both in EMEA and APAC, a lot of customers in Asia-Pacific in particular. You've got it tends to be, as we all sort of know, this like mobile shift always, it seems to start in the east and it moves west. So a lot of concern with mobile security in Asia, and then in EMEA and here. But I mean, it's a global problem, and we have, you know, offices and people all around the world.
Okay. Now, who's your typical customer base like that you're trying to target? Is the small to medium-sized business, the large companies, or a mixture of both, or even the individuals too, because the smartphone has really impacted our everyday lives so much?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of a mix, right? It's. But I will say that we are focused on the enterprise, and the enterprise being non-consumer, right? So you think of like the consumer market, which is just us as individuals, but then the enterprise is the the other part of that. Within that, though, you've got a small, medium business companies that need a solution, as well as larger Fortune 500. But what's interesting about that is that while we focus on the enterprise, the solutions that we provide, they impact your personal life as well, right? So as you're protecting the data that's on a phone or what the phone has access to from the corporate side, you get this nice benefit of while you may be doing things in the personal world, right? Maybe you're doing online banking or whatever, you're protected as well. So we don't intentionally target that, but you sort of personally get this nice benefit because of the enterprise focus.
Okay. Now, how large is Imperium? I mean, both from a revenue standpoint, if you can share that, and from an employee standpoint?
Yeah, so we typically don't share the revenue piece, but we're growing really fast, right? In fact, we just recently won an award here in Texas, the fastest growing technology company in Dallas, or in North Texas over the last 3 years. So it's a meaningful number on the revenue side. Employee side, we're approaching 200. You know, so we've got a good real business, you know, where we've got people, hundreds of customers, and it's going really well.
Okay, sounds excellent. Congratulations. Now let's
dive
into your product and service lines. It looks like that Zimperium has distinctive products and services in device protection, the Z3A Advanced App Analysis, the ZIAP In-App Protection, and the Z-Anti Diagnostics. Can you go into more detail on all of these, and how is it used in cybersecurity and securing the smartphone?
Yeah. So there's. Let me break it into these. Almost these two parts. You have. You have our ZIPS product, which stands for Intrusion Prevention System, and that's our app that sits on the device. And then you also have Z-App, which stands for In-App Protection, and that's where we take the technology and embed it in someone else's app, right? So an example of that may be a bank. A large bank would say, you know, I want to make sure that all of my banking transactions are protected so that we don't experience fraud. And so we embed the technology, on-device machine learning-based technology in the app itself, so that the person, you know, the phone owner or the tablet owner never sees it, but it's in their protection. So we have these two pieces, ZIPS, which is our app. People download, a company can manage it, sit down the device, provides all the protection you could want, and then you have it embedded. And we really see a pretty good mixture of both. The benefit of having in the app is that you don't, as a company, you don't have to worry about adoption because it's already in it. So when you do your update and, you know, you push it to the App Store or the Google Play, the protection's already in it. And companies really like that because they have 100% adoption immediately. But some people also want to have, they want to just have the app on the device to know it's there, know that it's working, protecting them. And so we have people going that route as well. But so you have these two primary ways of protection. Now, beneath that, you mentioned we have something called Z3A, which is an advanced analysis of an app. So as an IT administrator, you might want to get an idea of all the apps in your environment and the risk profile. And so you would do this analysis. The report, believe it or not, ends up being 40 or 50 pages long, depending on how complicated the app is. But it shows things like, well, is it, you know, is the app making a call? Is it accessing the email system on the phone? Which, like, for some apps, you would never need to be accessing email. Or is it making a call to a particular country? Or is some other process being accessed? So you give this really nice diagnostic of, here's the app, and then you can make a decision if it's okay to be in your environment or not. Right, so that's the Z3A advanced app analysis. So you've got the Zips piece, which is the app on the phone. You've got the Z app, which is the embedded app. And then you've got this way to look at the apps in really in depth. And then the last piece you mentioned was Xanti, and this is for people doing pen tests. So they're able to download the application and then test it. And so see, like, have I made an application that is secure, right? Or can I get into it? Or is there a way to, pen testing, penetrate it, penetration testing? So it's really a tool for developers to see how secure they built an app. So between the four of those, we've got this really the complete coverage for protecting mobile devices and mobile apps.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. Now, can you tell us more on the architecture of these services? Is there some kind of underlying platform, and what kind of dashboards and reporting tools do these services have?
Yeah, so the architecture, and I'll take it maybe just real high level for a second and say we made this decision architecturally years ago when the company was founded that we would do on-device protection, and that was really significant to us, and it was a really significant choice because we believe that you needed to be responding to threats really in machine time, right, like on the device. As soon as it was happening, we would take this technology that has been trained with billions of data points over multiple years in the lab so that you didn't need signatures to be pushed down and to know if there was something bad happening, which was kind of an old paradigm of security was you would do a mat, like a pattern match, essentially. We said, you've got to have this on the device, and by monitoring these key attributes, know that something was going on or not. But it had to happen on device because you don't always have a connection. You can't necessarily rely on it. And the turnaround time, if you were to take and say, I've seen something, let me send it to the cloud and analyze it and then send a response back. Well, that may be relatively quick. Like, it may only take a couple seconds. But in an attacker's timeline, that's almost infinite time. Right? There's so much could happen in those couple of seconds that we felt it was much better to do the architecture this way. And that's a key difference, actually, of us and other folks in the space, is that we said we made that decision to do it on device. So that key architectural decision was really important. Now, outside of that, you have you've got a platform that's gives you visibility into all of your devices. Are any of them under attack, or have they been attacked, or what operating system are they running? Is it out of date? The ability to set policy based on that to maybe notify the user that something's going on, or maybe not. But everything you would expect to be able to manage that device and then get the analytics off it is available through the main console that the devices always check into.
Okay. Now, this is a follow-up question. Do you service all the devices like the iOS, Android, and the Windows Mobile, or are you focused on one or two of those?
It's really iOS and Android. What we saw on the Windows side was there was some initial interest for I'm drawing a blank. There was a version of the mobile phone, Windows Mobile. I wish I could remember. It began with a K, but it was a small version of it. And we didn't see the market volume, right, or the demand for it. You predominantly, you're going to cover 95%+ of the market on iOS and Android. So it's really the two of those that we focus on, which gives us not only access to the phones and the various operating systems on the phones, but also on the tablets.
Okay. Now, what kinds of customers do use your services?
It's really any company that has employees or with these devices. Maybe they're bringing them in on their own, or maybe they're corporate issued. But it's so in that sense, it's really anyone, because everyone has these devices that now have access to critical information or they're storing information. In general, though, where you see, if I think of like a timeline of adoption, you see some of the more the industries with more sensitive information. So the financial industry, right, is going to they always seem to be leading in terms of technology and security, because they're the ones that are under attack often more than other folks. So you see financial for sure. You see We see in the healthcare side, there's a lot of sensitive information, both private medical information or even information that's there. And while it's private, it's also, you know, you want to keep that protected, but then people would possibly try to steal it to perform insurance fraud, as an example. So you've got healthcare, you've got the banking industry, a lot in retail. You know, we see a lot of retail organizations now. I mean, even in our own lives, we can identify with, you know, you get the app, right, for a fast food restaurant. There's a transaction going on, and there's money being exchanged. And so now you see more and more of those verticals, and the companies in those verticals looking to protect the phones, primarily to make sure that there's not some sort of fraud going on.
Okay.
And then I would add to it one other thing, Ravi, is the government space is big too. That is huge, right? So the government in particular, government in general, but on the federal and the public sector side, we've got cities that are saying that they need to protect their residents. So they're offering solutions. For example, you know, the city of New York said that they believe it's important to protect their residents in the cyber world just as it is in the physical world if they're walking around in Times Square or a neighborhood. And so they made an app called NYC Secure. It's free to download, free to use for everyone in the city, any resident of New York or any visitor to New York, to keep them protected when they're online. And it's done completely with privacy as a main concern. So there is no like communication back to any console or anything, right? Like I talked about before, on the enterprise side, this one is totally it's only on the device. And that architectural change we made a while ago enabled that to happen. So people download it. We have no idea. The city of New York has no idea who they are, where they're, anything. Like, there's no information protected when they use it. So we see that in the city, right? So state and local governments, but then also at the federal level.
Okay, sounds excellent. What kinds of industries do you serve? I mean, you know, with mobile security, I mean, it seems like you service about every industry that's out there.
We do. You know, it's anyone that has mobile devices, and you think of a kind of a broad spectrum from, you know, some of the largest banks in the world are our customers. And then you think of an extreme, although it's like our old way of thinking of this being an extreme, but you think like manufacturing environment where you have this picture of, you know, assembly lines and automobiles being put together, for example, but those have now been such highly automated and use often these mobile devices, and they're either running Android systems or iOS systems, and you need to protect all of them. So it's really, any vertical, right? Any industry that has mobile devices, and those devices access critical information or proprietary information or IP, or they have them local on the device, that you need to provide some kind of protection.
Okay. Do you have any customer success stories that you can share with us, or any case studies that you'd like to elaborate on?
Yeah, you know, so I started talking a little bit about that, the New York City one. I think that's a good example. So let me just talk a little bit more about that, and then there's another one or two I can talk to. But the city, it's a real kind of a leading step that Mayor de Blasio is taking to recognize how important security is in the cyber world, and to give this free application to protect people, you know, when they're online. I think it's an indication of where we think that security will go in the future for state and local governments, as people move from just, you know, just protecting people in the physical world to now in the cyber world as well, as a service that their local government offers. So that's a big one. It's NYC Secure is the product. If people are interested, they can go, if you're a New York resident, secure.nyc and learn more. We also have some use cases on the financial side. One in particular where this organization estimated that by embedding the technology in their mobile banking app, there's tens of millions of people using that, that they were able to potentially avoid over $1 billion in fraud, which is significant. And so what you see for sure, like on the banking side, is where banks have historically, they're the first to invest in security. They will have, just as part of their income statement, you know, a line that has an expense that's, you know, fraud, right? And all of us can realize that, you know, if we if someone steals our identity or someone steals our credit card or takes something, if we didn't do it, the banks end up having to incur that expense and they tend to, you know, reimburse you. Well, the banks, I see there's a shift happening now where they're saying, if we can avoid that up front, that would be a lot better than just assuming that we're going to have this expense line. And so by embedding technology in their apps where people are doing more banking, they're able to avoid, you know, to avoid that. So that's a good one. Any other issue, like the consulting industry and on and on.
Okay. Do you have any more that you can elaborate on for our audience? Or because, you know, mobile security is such a, you know, an interesting topic for everybody right now and it touches on everybody's lives.
So I didn't hear the first part of that again, Robbie, sorry.
Do you have any more client case studies you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, so here, another one. So we've got the banking one, you've got the city one. We are in some discussions right now with talking about like some of the retail organizations, the fast food organizations that have these mobile apps now. Same thing there. We're talking about embedding it in their technology so that when you buy, you're sure that, you know, there's not some fraud or someone stealing your, you know, credentials and uses that somewhere else. We also, there's a one of the largest consulting organizations in the world. We've got consultants flying around everywhere, and the data that they have on their devices is incredibly sensitive, right? Because, you know, these are companies, these are consulting organizations that are in some of the largest and, you know, most fast-growing technology innovators in the world. And here, you know, these consultants have access to very sensitive information about, you know, all the financials in the company and the headcount and new products that might be coming out, and they have this on their devices. Or it's being stored somewhere and they're accessing that. And so that's a big area as well as some of the larger, and not even larger, just consulting organizations in general that have access to this sensitive information.
Cool. Now, can you tell us more about the Z Labs Advanced Research and Exploitation Team?
Yeah, they. So this is, it's probably, you know, I think it's one of the only ones, if not the only one in the world, this research team that is just focused on mobile threats and mobile vulnerabilities. Really, really smart team. They know, you know, mobile security inside and out. They're constantly looking for ways that the, you know, the bad guys are going to somehow break in or compromise an iOS or Android device. And in fact, they many times, if you were to go into an example, the release notes on iOS, and, you know, it'll say that the update, you know, has some bug fixes in it, maybe some new features, and there's usually a line for security in the notes that says, you know, security updates. If you click through that, you'll see the details of it. Apple does a really good job of recognizing the individuals who discovered that vulnerability, you know, and give them credit. And oftentimes, it's one of our researchers that are listed there. Now, the way that that's done is you do what's called a responsible disclosure. So they find this vulnerability. They have a counterpart at Apple. They tell Apple. Apple says, yep, we see that that's a vulnerability. Then they issue a patch for it so that when it's made public, right, because you have this, that's what the responsible disclosure part is. You don't do that before they have a chance to fix it. They fix it, and then they disclose it so that anybody with the new version is, you know, immediately, you know, protected from that vulnerability being exploited. That team does unbelievably good work. They are on the cutting edge of what's going on in the mobile world and mobile security. Really, really smart team. The best in the world, without doubt.
Yeah, it sounds really fascinating. Now, I know that Apple and Windows, they offer, you know, these things called bounty hunter programs. Does Imperium also offer this to, I guess, legal certified hackers, you know, to kind of like break the systems and kind of help you find more of the vulnerabilities and report back to you?
Yeah, there is a bounty program. And it's, we, depending on what someone finds, like the vulnerability, it's not just a, if you find one, it's a flat, you know, bounty that you pay. But depending on it, and it, you know, it's possible that something we already maybe knew about or not, but we do participate in that, and it helps supplement the research that we do. Our team, because of the complexities in mobile and the strength that they have, they primarily are the ones that find this, but there are those cases where someone brings us one and we're happy to pay a bounty to ultimately protect the end user from any sort of vulnerability being exploited.
Well, that sounds awesome. Now, are your bounties, like, are the reward, I mean, the financials, and is it competitive with Apple and Windows? Can you talk about that, or how competitive lucrative are you?
It's a good question. So it's we're competitive. We tend to not give that out, right, because it depends so much, and it gives people the wrong perspective of either it's too much or too little, and it's not either, really. It depends on what they would bring to us. So based on what they would bring and the potential value of that, we would pay accordingly. But it's in line with other organizations that do bounty programs.
Cool. Sounds awesome. Now, this, I don't know how you're going to answer this one here, but how do you actually pen test for the Android and the iOS? Because penetration testing is, it's a very big, expansive field. I mean, do you make use of blue teams, red teams, purple teams, all of them, or what's your pen testing methodology like?
Yeah, so we have our developers, work hand in hand with the security, with the research team, with the Zlabs team. So it's a lot of it is done as part of our development process. And so you I'll give you an example, like a way to pen test is to say, well, let's connect this phone to a what looks like a legitimate Wi-Fi. Right, so maybe it's what's a common one, like Google Starbucks, right? I mean, it used to be the Starbucks, it was Starbucks Wi-Fi, and then I think Starbucks and Google came up with an arrangement, and so the Wi-Fi is complements of Google, right, and Starbucks, and so but the name of the Wi-Fi is a certain name, and so we could spoof that. So by pen testing it, we could put up a what's called a rogue access point that looks just like it. And we want to make sure that when that device connects to it, which looks to be legitimate, that we catch it and know that it's a rogue Wi-Fi and it's not the legitimate, Google Starbucks one. That's one example of how we pen test. But we go through the various type attacks. So like when you're thinking of a phone, they're either going to come as like a network-based attack, which is what I just described, or possibly a device attack, which is looking at taking advantage of a vulnerability in the operating system, or maybe trying to install a profile that's malicious, or you look at the applications itself, so the mobile application. So we take and test those primary vectors and try to pen test them. So we throw examples at it that may not be known, in particular that aren't known, because we rely on this machine learning technology to see if it would stop it, and it does. And that's how we go about the pen testing on the devices.
Okay. Do you try to jailbreak these devices also as part of the pen testing?
Yeah, we do. I mean, jailbreaking is relatively easy, but there's a difference between jailbreaking and compromise. So, like when a device is jailbroken, there are security flags that go up on that, right? Just within the device itself, it had no protection if it's jailbroken. Like when it communicates back to the App Store, hey, this device is jailbroken. What the bad guys tend to do is they don't jailbreak it as much as they compromise it. So they get in and they have a malicious app on it, which is not being jailbroken, or they install this profile that's a malicious profile, again, not jailbroken, or they have a connect to a bad Wi-Fi. And if you do that, again, it's compromised, but it's not jailbroken. So it's more the compromise that we pay attention to, but as a rudimentary test, could we see if we could jailbreak it? We could do that as part of the process, but we tend to focus more on the compromise piece.
Okay. Now, how do you, now that you just alluded to this before, but how do you make use of machine learning and artificial intelligence in your services?
So it's through years and years of training and billions of data points that we
sure.
spent in the lab putting these various data points, these different processes, monitoring the phone, how it reacts, how it doesn't react to these different threats. And based on that, you come out with a set that you know that if this is going on, something bad is happening, right? It's a lot like a like a nervous system, right? It's always there. Imagine just standing there, and your nervous system is always running, just like it would be on this phone. And someone comes up behind you and pinches your shoulder. Your nervous system would immediately know and would say, ow, right, to begin with, something's not right here, and your body would take some sort of action to that. So maybe you just move away, or maybe you turn around and slug the person that pinched you, whatever it happens
right.
to be. Same thing in machine learning, right? So you're looking at that device and saying, hey, something's not right here, and we have an incredibly high certainty that this is malicious based on the billions of other interactions we've seen like this. So we need to take some sort of action on it. But the core of it is this in the lab training that we've done over years with billions of data points.
Okay. Now, there's also a flip side to using, machine learning and AI. There's a lot of talk now that it can be used for the negative in cybersecurity. Have you heard about that? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's more where I've seen it used more as an efficiency thing on the attacker side. So they are like the attackers have got to a point where it's like any other business at this point. In fact, there was some research I did a few years ago that there's an entire economy around the black market of hacking, where you have people like a way to know that an economy is developed or it's flourishing or it's legitimate is that you have people that start to specialize, right? So you have people that focus in the security space, you say there's people that focus on maybe stealing the actual blank credit card. Then there's someone that focuses on stealing the number. And then there's someone that focuses on putting the number to the credit card, and there's someone that focuses on reselling it, maybe at the wholesale level. Then there's a retail level. And you have that example across the space. So maybe someone that finds email addresses. Maybe there's someone that finds email addresses for the C-suite that allows you to do some kind of phishing. So you try to be efficient. So a bad guy in this sense is going to look at could they develop their own algorithms that help them to be more efficient in attacking a device. It's possible, right? It's possible that they could do that. It takes a lot of investment, a lot of time to develop something where they could then attack something, a large set of devices, and find the ones that were more vulnerable. So they could. But it's a little bit theory at this point, because the reality is on a mobile devices, there's so little investment that's been made in the security side that it's an easy path for them to attack right now. So if you're a bad guy, you're thinking about efficiency and the return on your investment. Are you going to attack a laptop or a desktop that may have multiple layers of security, and there's billions of dollars in technology investments that have happened, and even more billions of dollars in research that's gone into protecting that laptop or on the firewall side for the network security, and you're going to have to break through all that? It's hard. If you're an attacker, you're going to say, I'm just going to go through the mobile devices because there's no protection on them, and I have access to the same information. And so it's more that, like, it's an efficiency thing than it is they're using it to machine learning or automation to do their attacks. At some point, maybe it could get to that, but right now they've got such an easy and efficient path through mobile devices, they practically really essentially don't need it.
Okay. Can you tell us more about the Z platform?
Yeah, so Z platform is really the overall solution, right? So this is the product we talked about before, where the Zips, which is the app that's on the device, Z app, which is the app that's in the technology that's embedded in someone else's app, the Z3A analytics, and then Xanthi, the platform is the whole piece. And so what we think of that when people are looking to provide this comprehensive mobile security, they will tend to look at the whole platform and not just one piece or the other, even though they could, and some do buy the individual pieces. If people see how they are being attacked today, and they have no idea they're being attacked. As soon as they deploy and they see they are being attacked, then they tend to look at the whole platform. Interesting data point is that 100% of our customers see threats when they deploy. It's not like there's a percentage or a small percentage or even a large percentage that say, yeah, we really didn't seem like every single company that deploys see these threats that they had no visibility into, and they deploy on some or multiple devices or all their devices, and their, you know, the screens essentially light up with the threats that they're being, you know, that they're under attack.
Okay. Can you tell us more about the mobile threat defense platform? Is there any differences between that and the Z platform?
Yeah, more that it's one's an industry category. So Gartner, who typically, at least in this space, is the first to define categories. Sometimes some of the other analysts, you know, like Forrester, maybe IDCD, but Gartner tends to lead here. So they've defined the category as mobile threat defense. So that's a category that we play in, that we're the leader in. Z platform is really our product category, not category. It's our product positioning, right? So we have the Z platform, which has all of our products and solutions in it, and mobile threat defense, or MTD, is the industry category.
Okay. Now, how do your services help ensure like the GDPR, HIPAA, and PCI compliance for your customers? I know, like in the healthcare industry, HIPAA is very, very adamant about protecting, you know, smartphones for patient data. Do you have any examples how that works for your customers? Do you have any like HIPAA examples you can share with us?
Yeah, well, there's typically, like, if you think of HIPAA or PCI or GDPR, you see there's these different subsections or components of those regulations, and we don't provide protection or compliance with all of them, but we do with a lot of them, and especially the ones that apply to us. So, like, it's a pretty common. Instead of going to the specific like regulation for each of them, there's some commonality across them all that says you need to protect the data that's on the phone, right? So that could be financial data, like in the PCI case about credit cards. It could be health data for HIPAA. It could be just personal information like GDPR. But there's this common thread that you'll see that says you need to protect the sensitive information on the phone. And so we do that. So we can, as a company, rolls out our solution either on the device, like in the app, or embedded in other people's apps, they can then prove that they are compliant because they are protecting the information, because there isn't a way for someone to break into the phone, steal that information, compromise it in any, you know, one form or another. And there may be multiple ways, you know, we can protect the phone and show that we're helping them to be compliant. There may be other things that they do through other solutions. You know, like it could be they may use what's called an MDM, which is a mobile device management. It puts a PIN, or it requires you to have a PIN to 4-digit or 6-digit to get access to your phone. And that would also help be compliant. So give me like one kind of narrow sort of part of the regulation says protect data. So all of those have something like that. And then by having Zips or the app on the phone, you can say, yes, I'm adhering to this particular part of this this regulation.
Okay. Now, that kind of brings up another thing. Biometrics is one of my specialties, and I know that Apple's pioneered the use of the Touch ID and Face ID on their iPhone. What do you think about using biometrics as a means of 2FA or even just as one layer of security for a mobile device?
I love it, right? You should have it. And in fact, I mean, I do on all of our devices, even my kids' devices, who, you know, they're not accessing company data, but I mean, we have that, the thumbprint for sure. They don't have the facial, they don't have the iPhone X's or 10s yet. So they just do the phone. They just do the thumbprint. I think it's a great solution to have. It's not the only thing, right? So if you think about yourself sitting in a coffee shop or a restaurant or, I don't know, it could be anywhere. You're actively on your device, so you've already gone past the login piece, right? So you already either given your thumbprint or your face, facial recognition, or you put in a key, you know, a PIN. So you're already working. If you're already in that state, now you're open to someone attacking your device either from the device level, the network level, or the app level, and so you're past that point, right? So you still need that on-device protection, but having some sort of PIN or facial, some sort of authentication there, absolutely critical. And in fact, when we tell everyone, you know, that's like the table stakes that you should have that regardless on your devices already. You should be implementing it.
Right. Okay. Now, does Imperium engage in mobile forensics?
Yeah. I mean, we get a lot of the data that we get. People mean different things when they say forensics, but we get a lot of data off the devices, provided it's not one of those use cases that I talked about, like with New York City, where we don't see it at all. It all operates completely blind to us, just on the device, but it's protecting, you know, the residents of New York. But in a corporate environment, you get data coming off the phone, and that data is very valuable in terms of forensics data. So you have this, it's in the console, and then if you want to go deep into any particular piece of it, we capture the data for the organization so that they can do, you know, the forensic level analysis.
Okay. Now let's kind of segue now here to the overall cyber threat landscape. I've seen your website. It looks like you won a lot of awards. Can you elaborate on some of your most recent ones that Imperium has received?
Yeah, so a couple, like Cybersecurity Breakthrough, we had one of those, was an innovation award. A couple on machine learning. We're proud of that one because that is, we believe, is the way to stop these threats going forward, is through this, you know, having it being trained in the lab, the machine learning / artificial intelligence to stop attacks. Happy about those. I mentioned earlier the Tech Titans Award, which is a North Texas award for fast-growing technology companies over the past, you have to go back 3 years. And there's a lot of really strong companies in this space, and we came out on top of that. A couple of rankings with some of the analysts. If you look at some of the Gartner rankings and what we've, they don't issue an award, but if you look at the product comparisons, really happy with how we're stacking up against the competition, and especially with someone as prestigious in the industry like Gartner.
Sure. Now, given that the mobile security, field is so broad, I can't fathom it, how does Imperium try to deal with all the cyber attacks? Do you just deal with all of them, or do you just select a few that you really want to focus on? I mean, it just seems like such a mind-numbing, landscape to even engage
yeah.
in.
Yeah, you know, it's huge. When you look at, you think of it overall, and that's why, and what we think, like, the future is through the mobile devices. We think that is where the current and future attacks are going to originate, through these mobile devices, to get into not just the data on the phone, but then into the corporate networks. So we're focused there. It's probably a good indication is, this is also from Gartner, a statistic that says by 2020, 30% of all malware will be mobile malware, which is, on the surface, you think, wow, that's a lot, right? A third of it will be mobile. But then you take a step back and think, well, just how much malware is there? There are hundreds of thousands and millions of pieces of malware out there.
Yeah.
And the fact that 30% will be mobile by 2020 is pretty astounding. The growth rate there is incredible, but it's, like I said earlier, the bad guys, they want to be efficient, and it's an ROI in them for the time they put into their whatever return they get. They're going to go the path of least resistance, which is the mobile side.
Right. Okay. Now, there are tons of cybersecurity vendors out there, in California and on the East Coast. What separates Imperium from the other cybersecurity vendors? Why should a customer say, hey, I want to come to you first versus company XYZ, for example?
It's this focus on mobile, right? So there are by us having this focus on mobile security, we offer something that other security vendors can't. So most security vendors that are out there that are kind of offering broad-based solutions can't go deep, right? They have to go wide. And so that expertise becomes at the security level versus any particular piece of it, which is why someone like McAfee, as an example, we have a partnership with them with their mobile security. They have an awesome mobile security solution called Envision Mobile. It's our technology underneath it. We partnered with them. We liked what they were doing. We liked what they were doing. They liked what we were doing. And so we brought it together in the market. It's their branding, their solution, but it's our underlying technology because of the strength that we have on the mobile side. And so that's what differentiates us, is this focus on mobile from the research side, which is the real bleeding edge, right, all the way through to the development side, and then to the sales and marketing, and ultimately to the product being in front of people.
Okay. Now, do you offer any free trials or any type of free risk assessments for your customers before you onboard them on?
Yeah, we do. We do. In fact, if you go to the, if anyone goes to the website, pyramid.com, you'll see a contact us form, and there'll be a way to say that, you know, can I do a free trial? We tend to be involved with it just a little bit, but we don't charge for it. But we, you know, people will do these proofs of concepts on, you know, maybe they have 10,000 devices in their organization, and maybe they want to try it on 10 or 15. We do that free, of course, for them. They can try it. What we tend to see happen is immediately when they do it, they start to see these threats, which is just incredible when you think, like, here's an example. One of our customers had no mobile protection, deployed it in the course of 30 days. So the first 30 days that they had it out there, they saw a million threats in the first 30 days. And of those, 26,000 were actual attacks, right? So a million, like, it could be like a simple threat, like, or a more advanced threat. So it could be like a threat was at the low level, like, you didn't have a PIN. You should probably have a PIN on your device, but that's not an attack. But of those million threats, we saw 26,000 attacks. And the part that blows your mind is that the day before, that was all happening, and they just didn't know. And then they deployed it, and you know, in the first month, they see a million threats and 26,000 actual attacks. So when we do these, we'll do these free for people. They can download it, use it. We'll help them, you know, as needed. Everybody who deploys it, regardless of the number of devices, they see these threats immediately, and then they tend to expand from there to get it out as quickly as they can.
Okay. Have you done any work with, like, BYD, bring your own device? Do you consult with your clients on that as to how they can best protect from that, or how they can best implement a solution like that in case they do want their employees to use their own cell phones? How do you deal with that?
Yeah. That's part of why we have those two different solutions, right? There's the app that we can put on the device, which is the Zips app, or embedded. So we absolutely can help people with BYOD or, you know, the alternative, and that is the corporate owned or corporate your own device set, whatever the equivalent is in the phrasing. If they bring their own, it's a policy that says, you know, you can use your own device, you can bring what you want, but you do have to have this app on it. And that app is going to protect you from, you know, anything that you might do that impacts the corporation. So data on the device that's corporate data, or you're accessing, you know, to access corporate email, you've got to have this, you know, application on your phone. People seem to be okay with that, especially when they see that it will protect them in their personal life as well, when they're using their device. You also have there's a solution that's it's an MDM, I mentioned it before, which now has evolved to UEM, or Universal Endpoint Management, where you manage the device, so people can still bring their own, but the management is done at the from the company level. So they, while you're an employee, they can make sure that you have the latest operating system or you have a PIN, and they can enforce that, and they tend to embed the technology, our technology, in that solution. So it's bring your own, but while you're accessing corporate, you know, there needs to be some sort of control there. It can't just be a complete free-for-all.
Sure. Now, do you have a partner program? Do you depend on any, like, a value-added reseller partner program for your sales and new customers?
We do, yeah. It's a great partner program. We partners, you know, I've been in security 20-plus years now, and I'll say that the partners are key to any vendor success, because they have the closest relationship with the end users, the end companies. They're the ones that are local, usually local in like in their community. They know the company, they have those relationships, and it's either small, right, where it's maybe a smaller reseller and a smaller company, or even at the macro level, like you look at some of the largest companies in the world, they tend to have a strategic partner that they're using to handle their security. Either, you know, they just use them for advice and consulting, maybe procurement, or they do a form, or it's a managed security service. But partners are critical to success. You can't be successful and provide end user or end company solutions effectively without partners. So we have our partner program both at the distributor level and then the reseller level.
Okay. Now, on other points, we keep hearing about the nation-state threat actors like North Korea, China, Russia. And recently, I think I read a headline where I think they have blocked, or the U.S. has blocked, I think, imports or exports something of the Huawei Chinese smartphone. What are your thoughts on these nation-state threat actors? I mean, not trying to get political here, but just what are your general thoughts on it?
Yeah. No, I think it's happening, and I think that if there's ever something of value, someone is going to try to take advantage of it or steal it. And it could be a value like it's IP, and a bad guy feels like they can take that and resell it. It could be something that is valuable as the nation, right? So, you know, there was an article last week. I don't know if it was true or not, but the report was that, you know, Trump's phone had been compromised and the people were able to
listen
to
it.
And that's important, right? So that's more like there's something valuable going on there. So why were the people listening, if, you know, assuming that they were? So there's always going to be something going on, you know, and it's this, you know, you have the nation state for sure. They tend to have more resources, more time, more people, money, you know, to get this, whatever this particular thing is, it might be of value, as compared to, you know, an attacker who may not have that level of infrastructure, but they're both going to look for something of value, and so it absolutely exists. And you know, you think, well, why wouldn't you protect your device? You know, like if someone, let's just speculate a little bit and say, if someone did compromise the president's phone, how did that happen, and where did it happen? Was it, you know, was it just intercepted cell tower communications, like someone set up a little hub to route traffic through, or was it an application that came down, right? And so you want to be able to protect that, right? So if someone compromised a phone and it was through something that we would have saw from a machine learning perspective, like a device attack, a network, or app, you would want to stop it. So you want to protect these mobile devices. They have, it's obvious, they have something of value on them or access to, and you want to make sure they're protected.
Okay. Now, just to kind of segue a little bit, have you done any work with the Internet of Things? I mean, we all keep hearing about, you know, where all our devices are going to be connected, and obviously the mobile device is going to be at the crux of all these connections. It's going to be one of the, you know, main central points, especially, you know, like the voice or the VPAs like Siri and Cortana. What are your – has Imperium done any work with the Internet of Things, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this, you know, this decision that we made years ago architecturally to be able to operate on the device that was early IoT thinking, right? You think about how fat, I mean, IoT is kind of part of our lexicon now, but, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, it was just starting to be that way. And then, but there was this huge projection, right? Like all the people with the analysts were all saying how this was going to take off. You saw some of the really early connected, like refrigerators, right, that were connected, or maybe even Nest, right, the thermostats, you know, the Internet of Things, they were, you know, IP addresses. So we saw this taking off. Part of that decision to architecturally design around being on the device is perfect for IoT. The challenge in IoT, which is different than some of the other security solutions, if you think back years ago with laptops or desktops, primarily Windows. Right now you have more Apple or, you know, Apple OS in the environment, but then you look at mobile phones, primarily iOS and Android. So you're able to provide solutions there. When you get to the Internet of Things, even though you made that architectural decision, which we made it right on the right one to do, you still now, but you have different operating systems on those devices. A lot of them are based on Linux as a kernel, but you have different manufacturers that are, you know, there's a difference between, you know, a Nest device and your Roomba or your refrigerator or, you know, something on a car, something controlling a traffic light. Those are all they're all IoT devices without IP addresses. But the manufacturers, there isn't a standard yet on an operating system. So you need to have the architectural, the architecture has to be right, but it's got to be on device. Then you work with the manufacturers at this point. At some point, you know, maybe we see an IoT OS. I don't know. I mean, there's so many people going into this space that it seems like that's a challenge to overcome, but it could be that the problem is so big in terms of standardization that we will figure out how to have that standardization so that there is a common OS, and then you could provide protection like we did historically to Windows machines, Apple, iOS, Android.
Okay. Now, what are your general plans for expansion as Imperium? Do you plan to enter new markets, offer new products and services, or a mixture of both?
Yeah, well, we're in the main geographic markets, right? So, you know, the North American market, EMEA and APAC. We'll continue to expand. We have incredible demand for the product and the solution, so we'll continue to expand on the sales and marketing side for sure. Of course, you have to, as you do that, there's more demand for new features and new solutions within the product, so you need to invest in the development side. And then the research team is always out there looking for the latest and greatest. So it's an expansion kind of both, if you think of it, vertical and horizontal, that we're growing, in some sense, we're growing in all directions, and we'll continue to invest in all directions.
Okay. Now, how do you foresee the cyber threat landscape changing or evolving in the coming years, and how do you plan to keep up with all this?
Well, so keeping up, I'll start with the last part of your question. We have the best mobile security research team in the world, so we'll continue to bring more research on, more researchers on, invest in the team so they can stay ahead of the curve of the bad guys finding, you know, the vulnerabilities before we would. But I also see it evolve, so we would do that to stay ahead of it. But you see it evolving more targeted attacks. But I'll say that, like, we're early. Like all of these attacks are happening. We see, I mean, I gave you the example of in the first 30 days, a million threats that this one company saw. It's all happening today, but people just don't see it. So in the near term, and I'm going to say in the next 1 to 3 years, you'll see this acknowledgement as people realize, I have been under attack for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, and I just didn't know it. And so this investment in the technology to protect their organizations, just like they have invested in network security or other endpoint security. So I see that as a near-term trend. Once you get that to a steady state or a penetration state that's similar to network security or the traditional endpoint, because this is really just the new endpoint, then you start to see more targeted attacks because it's not as easy because it's not wide open for the attackers anymore. So then you start to see more targeted, more phishing attacks. And that's an area that we are looking at to apply the machine learning technology and techniques to phishing. So phishing traditionally is done now with URLs. And you just say, oh, that's a bad URL. We know that's a phishing site. We think there's a way to apply machine learning, just like we're doing to the device to know if it's being attacked, to apply machine learning on a phishing site. And we're excited about that development, and that's something that's not in the too far, however that phrase is, not too distant future. That's
right.
On the machine learning piece.
Okay. Now that, the threats to mobile devices are increasing dramatically, as we've discussed many times in the show, the C-suite now is coming under fire. You know, C-level executives, the CIO, the CISO, the CFO, and who knows what else is involved in there. What are your thoughts on holding the C-suite more accountable for mobile security for their employees? Do you think they should be held 100% accountable? How do you foresee this playing out here in 2019?
Yeah,
because right now,
so I do. Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you, Robbie. I think the C-suite should be responsible, but I think it's actually a little bit different than that. And so I think it's more until it's not just the C-suite, it's all employees. So until there's some repercussion of me clicking on something or doing something that causes damage to the company, in the security, cybersecurity in particular, I don't think things are going to change. Now, you could do it from the top and say if the C-suite was, like, their jobs are on the line, right? If there's a breach, their jobs are on the line. That would absolutely change the behavior. And it could influence policies throughout an organization. There's another approach that just says if you know, you've given people the training and they know the risk, but then they still go do something, they should maybe lose their job, right? And I'm kind of being extreme in that. But until there's some sort of repercussion, why would, you know, there, like, if you like literally stole money from a company, right? So you went in and just stole, like, you petty cash because companies don't have like a big, you know, safe anymore. But there's, you just stole, you know, you stole a couple hundred dollars or $1,000 petty cash, you'd be fired. No question, right?
Right.
Well, if someone goes in and go, you know, jailbreaks their phone, or not even jailbreaks their phone, just goes to a third party app store, brings a bad app on their phone, and it's gone around a corporate policy that says you can't do that, and that's resulted in someone stealing information right from the company, what's the difference? The dollar value probably greater, if not more, than what we saw in petty cash, and you'd be fired. But on the cyber side, there's no repercussion. So until there is, I don't know that you'll have a big behavior change. Now, so you could do it at the person level, but, you know, it could be that behavior would be influenced. Like, you started this with the C-suite. Maybe you started the C-suite and say your jobs are on the line, and that would
right.
Influence the behavior to the rest of the company.
That's a very interesting comparison you made, because I never heard it quite put that way before. Maybe I'll definitely highlight that here in the podcast. Now, based on your experience and knowledge of 20 years of cybersecurity, what do you think the number one cyber threat will be in 2019? Is it going to be like the cryptojacking or the ransomware, botnets? What do you think that number one or two threats will be?
Well, for mobile security, I think it's just it's broad, like it's just wide open right now, right? So it's like the devices are completely unprotected, and people will they will see that they've been under attack for years and didn't know it, and now they know it and they do something about it. But that's kind of specific to our space. I think broadly, what you'll see is maybe more and more sophisticated phishing attacks, right? So that may get around traditional defenses or traditional, like you kind of sense that something's a fish. You know, I see these all the time, and I get emails that look really legitimate. You know, BOGO is the same and everything. And I think you'll see that, which is part of why we're investing in this machine learning on the anti-phishing side, if you think it's really the only way to protect it. But I mean, I could see the ransomware maybe continuing to increase. I mean, that it seemed like that flared up mid-year and it's kind of died down a little bit now. Possibly cryptojacking, right? But I mean, that's just looking for processing power, and I don't know. I mean, it's on the mobile side. You know, are you going to get much value out of using the relatively small processing capacity that you might have on a mobile device? Yeah, probably not. Could you see mobile botnets? I mean, they're out there, but maybe that's instead of just stealing information on the phone, you could see more mobile botnets where someone is using it as a massive denial of service. Yeah. And now one area that may be an interesting one that you start to see is on the IoT side. We haven't really seen any like public or highly publicized IoT attack, and that could be something in the next several years that we see that brings awareness to that particular platform as well.
Yeah, I know that bringing up IoT, and California just signed some legislation on IoT security standards, but it was kind of like mocked at because it just didn't really address anything. Do you hear anything about that, or?
About as much as you did, right? Like people did it address something or not? But I mean, what I applaud in that is that you have to take that first step, and the first step's not always right. So you go and you do it and you learn, and then you take another step and another and another. And so maybe, you know, that will get to where we have some sort of standard in that area.
Now, finally, as we wrap up the show, I'm going to save the best question for last. What are your top tips that you tell people to protect themselves, especially their smartphones, from a cyber attack?
So there's two things. Let me start with the one that is specific to us. Like you would never dream about running your laptop, your desktop, your network without security. Mobile devices are just another endpoint, and you have to put something. You've got to do something to protect it. So as an organization, you have to get some sort of mobile security on those devices. And those devices are 2 to 3 times the number of, you know, laptops or desktops that you might have. So you have to do that. So that's the advice there is you have to get something on that device to get that visibility to know if you're being attacked and being able to stop it. So that's the corporate side. The other side of it, though, is something that I've been telling people for 20 years. I mean, I remember being back in the Bay Area, and I'd be driving. I was at the time I worked for Maxi, and I'd be driving from the South Bay up to where I lived in the city. And I'd get a call from the local TV station that would say, hey, can you stop by and do something on air about this latest virus? And I would do that, and I did countless ones of them, and it was the same story all the time, and it went the same way. This was 20 years ago, and it was it always started with, well, what is it that we're talking about? So you give a description of what it is, and then you'd say, well, what can people do about it? And this was like to the end user, not to the company. This was to the end user. And the story then, which is the same now, is stop clicking on stuff that you don't know who it's from. Or if it looks weird, like if you just get that sense that something's not quite right, like why did I get something from Apple when I haven't done anything with Apple? Or why did I get something from it? Just stop clicking on it, right? So that's like the simple summary of that is on the corporate side, you've got to get something on the device. On the personal side, stop opening things, clicking on attachments that you don't know who they're from.
Right. Okay. Okay, cool. Do you have any other tips that you can provide to our users here?
Always be aware, right? Always be aware that, I mean, bad guys are always going to try to take something of value and make sure that you have at least some level of protection there. They're going to go the path of least resistance, right? So if they are driving down the street and your house, your front door is wide open, you can see in the living room, probably going to go there before the person that has a gate out front and locks on their doors. Same thing on the mobile side. Get something on that device to protect it. So that you have, in comparison to someone else, you are a more difficult target than someone else.
Okay. Well, Michael, thanks for your time this afternoon. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to speaking with you here again in the near future. Thanks for your time.
Yep, same here. Yeah, thank you.
Take care. Bye.